Okay. Okay. Now, last week we hope everybody is well. Okay, last week we talked about the one part of the section Tess in Be'er Hasheni here of the Maral of the Be'er HaGaila. And the part of it which we focused on last week was the idea, the Maral's explanation of Hitzah Zera Levatola, Hashchas Zera, the destruction of seed, where he, in the context of a misunderstanding which perhaps existed among some, so he explained the gravity of how it was viewed by Chazal. And remember, as we learned last week, as he spoke about it, he talked about the notion that it was really breaking the foundations of creation, breaking the creativity to begin with, rather than shortening life, it was erasing life, right? The connection to the Meha Mabul, right? It's as if he brought the Mabul down to the world, the level of Hashchasa, where the life can't even begin, in a sense, as we talked about with Miriam and Amram and Yocheved, was more of a fundamental destructiveness than where the life, Layalein Rachman al Etzlan, is ended from a certain vantage point. Okay. Now, the other angle that we would like, that I want to speak with you about here today, is the other half of this section in the Maral. And this half, what I'm going to try to do with you is, I'm going to share with you the problem or the issue as it's posed by the Maral. I'm going to share with you the Maral's approach to resolution of this problem, and then perhaps a different approach to resolution of this problem, which might come across to be somewhat different than the approach of the Maral. Okay, I'm just going to ask you for 1 minute. Okay, I had a strange morning this morning, so I just wanted to just have a minute. I missed my a little bit of time. That I want to just have a minute to refresh myself, okay? If you don't mind. A commercial, please, Bruce.
Okay, you. Run out and get the next quote.
Okay. The issue that that the Maral wants to address is the following. The Gemara in Maseches Sanhedrin has a discussion about the mitzvahs b'nei noach, the mitzvahs which non-Jews are responsible for. We usually count the seven mitzvahs. The Gemara has a sugya with different opinions within them, what the mitzvahs are, if it's limited to the seven that we are generally familiar with. So Rav Chanina says as follows: Ben Noach sheba al ishtoi shelo kedarko chayev. Ben Noach, who has a relationship with his wife shelo kedarko, in an unconventional method, is going to be chayev, is going to be punishable. And when we speak about those things, what a Ben Noach is punishable for, it's chayev misa, it's chayev, punishable by death. Shenemar, as it says, v'dovak b'ishtoi. Says al kein yazov ish esavi v'esimai, a man will leave his father and mother, v'dovak b'ishtoi, and attach himself to his wife. So that attachment, the attachment of v'dovak b'ishtoi, it would seem, can only be when it is kedarka, when it's in the normal way, v'loy shaloy kedarka, and not when it's shaloy kedarka, not when it is in an unconventional means. That doesn't create the devek. That doesn't create the proper attachment. Rashi's explanation of this Gemara: why is it that it's considered to be that there's no devek, that there's no attachment created there? Says Rashi, mitoich she'ena nehenis, because she doesn't have the same pleasure from it. So therefore, b'davar ena nidbekes imay. So it doesn't create the attachment. The idea of the davak b'ishtay, the idea of the attachment that is created between husband and wife, is because of the joy which one brings to the other. And therefore, says the Gemara, that governs as well the nature of the physical relationship between the two of them. That's what the Gemara says according to Rashi's understanding of it. Of course, the idea of kedarka v'shaloi kedarka, the normal and the abnormal in terms of this, has to do as well with the potentiality of it being a productive union, a reproductive union, that it would be able to accomplish in that way. That's the idea. And by a Ben Noach, by a non-Jew, we say that this is something which is actually punishable. The problem which the Maharal is dealing with is that in the Gemara it seems that the same prohibition does not necessarily apply to a Yisrael. The opposite. The Gemara says that by Yisrael this prohibition doesn't apply. Now the Maharal's qualification on this is the psak of the Rambam which he brings, which you could perhaps begin to understand, you know, with the sensitivity of the subject, that was how he started in this perek. That, as the Rambam rules, that when whatever allowances we are giving, but it is not with the production or the waste of seed, right? Allowance of shelo kedarka would not be with the production or the usage of seed, because of the great seriousness with which Chazal viewed the destruction of with the destruction of seed. But what is more significantly, you know, basically troubling for him is, why should this issue of the v'davak b'ishtoi, of the attachment to the wife, be more present by the Akum and be less present by the Yisrael? In fact, there's an opinion in the Gemara. There's an opinion in the Gemara right there, which is just follows through the sugya generally, that you cannot have something which is going to be forbidden for the Akum and permitted for the Yisrael. It's just not an acceptable result, because then it seems like Judaism is Kedusha Kala. It's a lighter Kedusha. We say this generally, right? That's an opinion which follows through the whole sugya when it discusses these things, and there are put forward ideas of possibilities of things that may be amongst the prohibitions for the non-Jews but permitted for the Jews, that we wouldn't be able to have that possibility. That's why, for instance, the poskim would rule about certain changes which occur if a person converts to Judaism, right? So technically speaking, it may be possible to say as the Gemara says, that look, a person who converts to Judaism is kekatan shadnailadami, they're like a newborn child. So therefore, whereas before as a non-Jew they couldn't have married their sister, but if they convert and their sister converts and they're both like newborn children and they're not considered related to their original family, so then they would be able to marry each other. Midyoraisa, in a certain sense, some would say that would be true, but we say they can't do it. Why? There shouldn't be a sense that they came from a kedusha chamura to kedusha kal. When I was a guy, I couldn't do this. Now I'm a Jew, I can do it. Right? It's usually to be understood the other way around, that we've entered a more demanding framework. So even though over there, it's not the idea that the halacha changed, it's just that the facts on the ground, the circumstances changed, which make it irrelevant. But still, to even give that impression in any which way is not possible. Which parenthetically also, according to the Paiskim, influences the attitude towards kibbut av v'aim, towards respect for father and mother. I'm a newborn child, I don't have to respect my parents anymore. Right? Even if kibbut av v'aim isn't one of the mitzvahs of B'nai Noach, but still, that's why, some have the idea that, it's as if the parents don't exist. But generally speaking, that's not the accepted approach of the Paiskim. It is that, these were the person's parents. They respected them before. Now they're Jewish. They're not going to respect them anymore. It's not the way to do it. So in a broader sense, when we speak about the halachas, the mitzvahs which apply, if something was mutter li Yisrael, so then perhaps it has to be mutter for the Yakum. It has to be mutter for the Goy also. The Gemara has, for instance, a technical discussion about some of our favorite mitzvah, Eber Menachai, taking a limb from a live animal. The Gemara over there speaks about how Shechita, the Gemara speaks about how Shechita, when a Jew does the Shechita, so even if the animal, in a sense, seems to have some physical life in it, but it already is matir, it removes the prohibition of Eber Menachai. Will that be true by a guy? By a guy, there is no notion of Shechita, there's just a notion of death. Right, but of the animal, there's no requirement of shechita. So it could be again that animal will be at this point mutter for Yisrael, but still be that meat will still be usher for a guy as Eiver Menachai. So can that be possible? Can you have such a thing? So there's a discussion as like that which surrounds this statement of Rav Chanina from this verse which was said to Adam HaRishon, which implied that it's a universal mitzvah that. There has to be the attachment which would preclude unconventional relations. But on the other hand, the Gemara learns from elsewhere, says elsewhere that that's not true by a Jewish man and his wife. So how could once? So therefore, maybe it can't be forbidden for a guy either. But as the Maral explains, if it's permitted to the guy, if you argue with Rav Chanina, it's only because once the Torah said a Jew may, so then you can't say that a guy can't. But In principle, for Adam as he was originally existing, it should have only been Kedarka. It's only afterwards, perhaps, when the Torah was given to the Yisrael, that they permitted it generally because they had to permit it to Yisrael, and once it's permitted for the Jewish people, it's going to be permitted for everybody. So the Maral wants to understand why, if it was in the original plan for man that it should be only in the way of kedarka, the way which is productive, the way which is mutually hanoah, mutually pleasurable. So why on earth would when it came to the Israel, why should things change? Why should things change? Why should it be that at this point in time it's going to be permitted in this other format? So the Maral explains as follows. And I'm going to read to you, as we usually do, a few snippets of what he has to say. Literally, and then we will discuss. Aval Peruzeh, what I'm reading for those of you who are interested in following me inside is on page Resh Yud Ches, the bottom half of the first column. Aval Peruzeh, Ki Kodem Shenitna Torah LeYisrael LeHayolem Amadrego HaElyona Ad SheKiblu HaTorah. The Jewish people themselves graduated when they received the Torah. From creation until the Torah was given, generally speaking, they were on a certain level, on a certain human, universal type level. Whatever way the Jewish people distinguished themselves, that Avraham Avinu was chosen, and so on and so forth. But still, they had a certain basic level of refinement. When Achikibul Atayr, once they received the Torah, then Hoyelam Adrega Elyona, then they were already granted the higher level. Vidovarze, Kyoishva Isha Yesh Bechiburam Shneipanim. So back to our subject, the man and woman, there are two aspects to their connection. Ha'echad hu achibur lepiriyah v'rivya. The first aspect is that the man and woman come together, and by coming together, they are able to produce a child. K'mayshu b'chibur kol ha'balechayim, which is true, of course, of all living things when the male and the female come together. It's not unique to humans. Shechibur shalemu b'shvil piriyah v'rivya. And he cites the verse, ki lo yisayu b'ra l'sheves yitzara. The pasuk says that the world was not created for tayu, to remain just empty or as basic as it is, but it was created l'sheves, to be inhabited, which the Gemara understands as presenting the great mandate of being fruitful and multiplying, because the world was created to be inhabited, to be settled. Uvevaday dover ze hachibur kedarka. Now that, of course, works only in the context of the conventional union that's able to produce. That's one aspect of the relationship of ish v'isha. Habechina hashniya. The second aspect is mitzad ki ha'ishu kemoi tzura le'isha u'mitzad hazeh yesh lehem chibur b'yachad. The second aspect that he teaches of here is a very, very significant aspect. One which can be understood, one which can be misunderstood, we'll try to teach it carefully. There, the man provides the tzura li'isha. The man is also perhaps able to provide the form for the woman, that somehow the two of them together would be the wedding, the matching together, the putting together of chomer v'tzura, of the matter and the form. Right, the terms chomer and tzura, I don't know if we've discussed before in this context or not. I think we may have, yes? Right? And the idea, you know, just plainly starting with it, and don't jump to apply this here to ish v'isha just yet, right, is chomer v'tzura is you have a ball of Play-Doh, that's your material. Like you go and you take a mold, or you use your very, very, you know, dexterous fingers, and you try to fiddle with it and form it, and you make it into a flower pot. You make it into the image of a flower. You give it its shape, its form. The matter is the same matter that it was before. However, it has been worked and it has been changed, that now it's in a whole different level. So we have this notion which was not created by the Maral, it's a notion which is found in the words of Chazal, of the relationship between man and woman of Chomer and Tzura in this sense. And that is part of the connection. That is not about the child that they produce. That's about the union of the two of them together. Just how these human beings themselves meld together, merge together, and how it affects them. Imagining, even for a moment, if they were, heaven forbid, the end of the line. Just how it remolds and how it reshapes them. So, without getting into the details of Chomer and Tzura, we can just describe it in a sense that way. And for that, we can indeed just reference the verse. The verse says, when it describes the original union of man and woman, so it says, Al kein yazov ish esodem, ish esaviv esimai. Then, as such, a man will depart from his father and his mother, v'dovak b'ishtoi, and attach himself to his wife. That was the verse which we had before, v'dovak b'ishtoi. It has to be kedark, it has to be in the conventional way. V'hoyu levosar echad, and they will become as one flesh. Now, what does that mean? They become as one flesh. So Rashi, here on the pasuk says, Lebosar echad, havlad notzar al yidei shneim. The child. V'sham nasa b'sarim echad. The child is one flesh, is one being. that has in it the father and the mother, right? Right? People look at a child and they say, oh, it looks like the mother. That looks like the father, right? So I'm a contrarian. I always say, he looks like both, right? And it's got to be, right? It's got some of the father and it's got some of the mother, right? You know, that is where the two units, the two separate, previously separate units are fused, are merged. In the child, you have basar echad, you have the reunion. If man originally and woman were part of one flesh, and then Hashem put man under, broke off part of him, and separated them, where do man and woman come back together? They come back together in the child. They're fused together in the child. So the meaning of the human child is not just simply the same as the meaning of the animal offspring. The animal offspring is also the fusion together of the man and woman, but it's fusion together that is original. The fusion of the ish ve'isha is understood that we're putting back together again the original unified, there's a chair over there, the original unified man and woman that were originally together one, and now we're bringing them back together again. Bringing them back together again. That's the notion, that's the idea. That's why it is so, so important for the internal makeup of a child that they see Shalom Bayis. I mean, excuse me for digressing over here, but it's real. It's a real consequence of this, that, you know, a child is the Basar Echad, is inside himself is the father and the mother, one. They become together as one between the father and the mother. And imagine, right, when a body turns on itself, you know, Le'olein Rachmanosan, there's this class of diseases, autoimmune diseases, right, where the body starts fighting itself. Right, where imagine where that conflict which is seen in the two elements of the child, and it starts turning on each other. It's very, very, very major thing, very, very difficult and disruptive thing. That's what behooves us, part of what behooves us, of course, as parents, to have that the children should have a sense of inner peace between the two parts of themselves. It's not just this is not a mystical concept. This is just a very, very basic practical application of this. But Rashi's reading, which in a sense, if we would translate the Gemara of Rav Chanina, where he says V'davak b'ishto, it has to be in the normal way that can produce a child, would fit with Rashi's reading. Rashi's reading on another sense is not a perhaps the most simple or instinctive reading of the text. The more simple and instinctive reading of the text might be, which is provided by the other Rishonim, other early commentaries in translating the verse, is that the man and woman, right, the man leaves his father and mother, he attaches himself to his wife, they become like one flesh, is that they relate to each other physically. And in the physical relationship there is, at least on some level and for some time, this kind of a physical union, which can be called v'hayu lebasar echad, and that is not about a union between the two of them that will only occur in the next generation. It's about a union between the two of them which occurs on their level, right between the two of them, that they themselves become bound to each other. These are the two aspects of relationship, and the two aspects indeed to a great degree of intimacy. Rav Moshe Feinstein was the great halachic authority of this, the greatest halachic authority who ever, of course, lived on these shores of America and of the 20th, in a certain sense, of certainly of the accepted of the latter half of the 20th century. Rav Moshe Feinstein writes about this in a tshuva, in one of his responsa, where he talks about issues related to these subjects, and he says that we have to understand, in a certain sense, in his formulation, is that we speak about the wasting of seed. So one might perhaps consider and say, if let's say a husband and wife would be together when the wife is pregnant, where the seed, there's no possibility of a further conception at this point in time, or where the wife is postmenopausal, right? Or whether the wife is, for whatever reason, is nursing a baby, or is on some kind of a pill that stops her from ovulating, right? And they have, and they're, so you might say, that it's a wasting of seed and it would be forbidden. But the halacha is clearly, clearly not like that. Clearly not like that. The opposite. So there's another thing, and there's a responsibility which a husband to his wife called ona, which is that, you know, to be able to have a happy and healthy relationship with each other. And the Marav Moshe says that we have to understand that those are the two purposes where seed is not considered as going to waste. One is when it is used as seed, and the other one is when it is used as part of the engagement of intimacy to create not a union in a third party, in a child that will be produced between the two of them, but a union directly between the two of them, between man and wife. That is a fundamental part of the picture, the way we are to see it, of the way these two relate. And, you know, we could discuss this with many, many many different angles and aspects. It's a very, very it's a very, very fruitful and productive discussion. You know, just perhaps as one illustration, very, very briefly, of how this works, one might cite the example of Yaakov Avinu. Yeah, that 4:45 on the clock is really throwing me off. one might cite the relationships that Yaakov had with Rachel and Yaakov had with Leah. Right? Yaakov had two wives, and in a certain way, each relationship had its own magnificent fulfillment, and in a certain way, each relationship had its own terrible frustration, at least for a time. And how's that? That Yaakov and Leah had an extremely successful relationship when it came to productivity. Right? Leah was supernaturally prolific in producing children with Yaakov. And their relationship directly would have seemed very, very much lacking. The verse describes that Yaakov hated Leah, right? So whether that term, right, we call that a little bit lacking, right? So some understand, right? That's the word of the pasuk. Hashem saw that Leah was sinua, that Leah was hated, right? So he hated her because he didn't like her nose, or he hated her because she was party to this great deception, right? That she, you know, she was, you know, it took two to tango, and here the two were Lavan and Leah in order to, you know, interrupt the relationship, stop the relationship from happening between Yaakov and Rachel. That's what the Ramban says, right? But yes, there are those who translate that snua doesn't mean that she was hated, it just means that she was less loved, right? Which I mean whatever, it's certainly more politically correct. I don't know whether it's, you know, and it's in the Rishonim, maybe they're trying to address the fact, you know, how could Yaakov, you know, hate her, you know, whatever it is. But certainly
in respect to Rachel,
right, relative to Rachel, she was the snua, but she wasn't really objectively hated. Who knows? But the bottom line is that we certainly aren't given a picture of the fullness of a direct personal relationship between Yaakov and Leah. But on the other hand, as Rashi says in the beginning of the thing, that Yaakov Avinu didn't divorce Leah because they were immediately productive, and he said, "L'maisein shaleilu anu migarish," I'm going to divorce this mother of my children. Right, of these I'm going to divorce. In other words, their commitment was based not on the success of their relationship with each other, but their commitment was based on what they had produced together with each other, on this third party, so to speak, union between the two of them. Yaakov and Rachel were very, very frustrated in terms of their ability to produce children, and in terms of their ability to create that third party union. But where was the great success of their relationship? Yaakov loved Rachel. There was a direct attachment and a feeding of personalities between Yaakov to Rachel and Rachel to Yaakov, where there was an impact of one upon the other. And so those present these two models of ahayu lebasar echad, of becoming as one flesh through the child, becoming as one flesh through each other. So, says, let's continue on a little bit more with the words of the Maharal. Va'adam shu shleimus habriya batachtainim roi shiyah shalem. Ve'en briyas adam shalem akim al yidei ha'isha. Man was created to be complete, right? And as the good joke, somebody said to me one of these weeks recently, right? And right, man's not complete till he's married, and then he's finished, right? So, ve'en briyas adam shleim akim al yidei ha'isha, right? And the creation of man is not complete without the woman, right? That was, he said, it's not good for man to be alone. V'zeu b'china shnia. And this is a second aspect. Ki chiburam b'yachad hu hashlam asadam. So on the one hand we have the creation, the coming together of man and woman to produce the child, and on the other hand we have the coming together, the union of man and woman, to produce the full man and woman, that they are incomplete without each other. V'chibur hazeh b'chol inin shehu nikra chibur v'ein kedarko v'ein sheloi kedarko. And that suggests the maral, whatever way you slice it, however they come together, even if they don't come together in the modality that is productive, that could produce a third-party child, but that's not the point, as I mentioned to you from Rav Moshe's formulation of it. Even when it can't produce a child, but nevertheless, it still is able to produce the relationship, the union between the two of them. This is the basic idea which the Maral presents. And so he goes on to suggest as follows, that fundamentally, since Bnei Noach, since the Jews are the ones who rose, were brought up to Madrega Elyona, to the higher level by the giving of the Torah, whether to the Jews who were there at that time or those who joined the Jewish people and have their own Sinai, have their own acceptance of Torah at their step along the way, so there they have the possibility of Shleimus HaAdam, of achieving that higher fullness of what a human being can be. And so, for them, we will speak not only about just the coming together for the purposes of production of a child, but we'll also speak about the coming together for the purposes of mutual development, refinement, perfection, in that way. Whereas, on the other hand, the Bnei Noach, with the more simple ceiling, you know, unless they decide again to break through that ceiling, but in the assumed status, in the assumed situation, so there, the development of the personality and character, the development of tzura, what we call, what the Maral uses this term of the more perfect, refined personality, that is something which is really not so much their lot. And therefore, for them, the manner of relationship would be much more of the first variety.
But Sukkim that we just reviewed, that the Maral brings, even for this second aspect, also comes from Adam and Chava. So, doesn't that suggest that both components apply?
Okay, great. So the Sukkim, the way we read it, also came from Adam and Chava. I want to, again, be clear, be very clear, the Maral doesn't bring those verses that I brought, v'davat lishoyu basarecha. The Maral would seemingly, according to this interpretation, be going more with Rashi's line, understanding Rashi and Chumash, not Rashi and the Gemara. I'll clarify that in a second, but Rashi and Chumash, that v'davat that v'hoyu l'basarecha, they will become like one flesh in the child, right? And v'davat b'ishto means an attachment that could potentially produce a child. That's the focus. And that was what was said to Adam. And as things graduated, so then perhaps it could come something more. If it existed by Adam, would that be such a question? It probably wouldn't be such a question, since we're dealing here with the original man, before man fell, which certainly had Madregas Hatsura, right? It certainly had the most lofty level, but then perhaps there would be, you know, something of a downgrade. But again, you're learning it from this Pasuk, so you're learning the limitation from this verse. You're dealing with the more limited framework. This is what the Maral says. I say Maral in Chumash, not Maral in the Gemara. Rashi in Chumash, not Rashi in the Gemara, because Rashi in the Gemara, when he focuses on Vidavak Beishto, he does not focus on the reproductive capability of it. He focuses on the fact that one way is mutually pleasurable and one way is not mutually pleasurable. And that's what's being ruled out. That sounds much more like a focus on the union between the two of them. that when people give each other pleasure, that creates a bond between them. That creates a bond of joy between them. And that is what he emphasizes in the Gemara. Now again, it's not a contradiction in Rashi, but it's certainly telling you that Rashi and the Gemara did not read V'davak b'ishtai, precluding these unconventional types of liaisons, as being because they wouldn't produce a child. He was reading it as because they wouldn't produce a bond between the two of them. This is one of the problems which I have with the interpretation of the Maral over here in this particular case. I am not giving you everything which the Maral says over here, and in that sense, in a certain sense, not giving you justice. He has much more of a discussion about Chomer Vitzura, about matter and form, how that relates to man and woman. I'm not going to be discussing, you know, every aspect of this here. I want to present, however, another side to this, but I do want to just say a word here about the notion of the Chomer Vitzura, about this notion of the relationship between matter and form, man and woman. No one, Maral included, will say that the idea is that the woman is just a ball of Play-Doh and the man is this fine, sophisticated artisan that goes and puts the two of them, you know, and gives the woman some form. In fact, what we see especially from examples like the Avos and Imos was that there was a channel that was two-way between the man and woman, and that the Mida and the character and the nature of one, you know, affected the other and turned onto the other, and that they affected each other mutually, each one giving their thing, doing their thing, and together producing something. But we understand as well at the same time that in a certain sense, let's say we would speak about the development of the child, right? So Avram and Sarah had a child together, and Sarah gave birth to Yitzchak. She produced the physical Yitzchak. She nurtured and developed Yitzchak. She nursed him for the first few years of his life. As she was doing that, she was also influencing him. There was Teiras Imecha. But then there came a certain next stage where, remember when he was weaned, Avram Avinu made a party. Why did Avram Avinu make a party when he was weaned? That's what the verse said. Avram Avinu made a Mishtah Gadol B'yom Higam Alas Yitzchak. Why did he make a party? He gave a party because now he was weaned. Now the child is not as attached to his mother. Now the father has a chance to forge the bond. And the father's bond is, the father has the mitzvah, the commandment, to start teaching him Torah, to start teaching him Lahavdil, a craft, and start developing more specifically. There is a sort of natural division of labor, something which has always had some, sharing of tasks which weren't so clear. Nowadays it's much less. The lines between them are much less clear, not necessarily always to our advantage, but where there is, you know, the responsibility of the building of the basics of the structure, and then of some of the additional things. We men are here. We have a responsibility, an obligation to study Torah, to make our intellectual and emotional understanding of life and of HaKadosh Baruch Hu more developed, more sophisticated. Women don't have that same achrayus. They don't have that same responsibility. They in many ways have a much more real connection to Hashem, right? But it's one which is more basic, more straight, right? And men are supposed to try to develop some of the fine points. Sometimes when you develop the fine points, you lose the basics, right? There's a famous comment from the Chassid Yavetz. Chassid Yavetz was a great scholar of years before, and he said that it's a phenomenon that we find that in the time of the Inquisitions, many Jews did not stand as strong as we would have wanted them to. Something which we found at many other times, the Jews just stood up and they gave up their life and they didn't do, you know, tricks of appearing one way on the outside, one way on the inside, or giving it up altogether. They did not stand up as well, in a certain sense, to the test of Mesiras Nefesh, of self-sacrifice for the faith that others did. And he said, you know why? His thesis was because in Spain they were famous as intellectuals and philosophers, and their understanding of religion became so delicate and so refined, and that was to their detriment. When faith was cleaner and clearer and more plain, it was stronger. And I think many of us would be able to find and profess that if we might happen to be, which again is always not always the case, might be a little bit more sophisticated with all of the learning which we do, sometimes, very often, the women of the house, our wives, will put us in our place. Don't give me these chachmas. This is the way it is, right? And we realize our weakness in such a sense. So this chomer tzura thing is not something that should create a chauvinist out of any one of us. Out of any one of us.
It wasn't the same in Yavon also?
Yes. There as well. Okay. So, this was, as we mentioned, one problem, the davak b'ishto, that he speaks of the Maharal. The other thing is that the permission which is given for the Jew, which was not granted to the Akum, is decidedly unflattering. In fact, it's one of the most, you know, it would have merited a passage for itself of the Maharal. He chose for some reason in formulating this passage not to start from it, but it's one of the most difficult to read passages of the Gemara for a person with some sensitivity. And that is, it goes as follows. The Gemara in Nedarim, Taf Chaf Amud Beis, when it gives the right, I just see he has the more fuller quoted it before. No, someone could pass me the Rav Yaakov, could you pass me the Gemara in Nedarim there from that shelf? Thank you. The Gemara says like this. Okay, and excuse me. Halachak yechen min davoy. Kol ma sha'adam reitze lasez b'ishto aisa. A person can do what he wants with his wife. Moshal, lebosar abam in beis ha'tabach. This would be compared to a piece of meat that you buy from the butcher. Rotzalach le b'melach oichlei. You want to eat it salted, deli, good. Tzli, roasted, oichlei. Go ahead. Mevushel, cooked, oichlei. Sholuk, overcooked, oichlei. Chein dag haba mi beis hatzayir. And the same applies to fish. Okay, now, that was a good one, right?
Well, I've got to run.
So, you know, that the Maharal should say, the Maharal says, now you have to understand what this means. What this means is that because there's a connection between man and woman that's magnificent, that the man gives form to the woman, and therefore it's above, right, by the Goyim, that they don't have this lofty personality, so therefore it's only for reproduction. But for the Jew, that there's this lofty personality that's going to be developed, so the two of them come together and they develop the personality more profoundly. Now, I could certainly understand that notion, but to plug that into buying a piece of meat from the store and do with it what you want, doesn't sound like that at all. Right? So, again, believe me, I would... You know, the Gemara has an expression, "Ei meshiv nesari lachar maisa." You don't try to respond to the lion after he's dead, right? You got to give him a chance, right, when he's alive. And the Maharal was known as the Ari, right? His name was Rav Yehuda Ari Leib, right? So he was known as the Ari, and the Maharal would certainly be able to explain this to us. I want to provide you, however, with a different approach. Divrei Torah Mishachim Kama Drachim. And I think that perhaps it has merit also that can go with this, related to certain things which we have discussed here already, but as follows. The Rambam, in the very first paragraph of Hilchos Ishus is the laws of marriage, the laws of relationship between man and wife. First paragraph. Kodem Matan Torah. Before the Torah was given, Haya Adam Pogea Isha Beshuk, a person would meet a woman. Imratza Huvehi Lisa, Isa, if they mutually agree that they should get married, you know how they get married? They go, what they call today, I think, common law. They go and they decide to live together as man and wife. That's all. That creates the marriage. Kiman shenitna taira, once the taira was given, nitzdavu Yisrael, the Jewish people were commanded, shim yirtza ish lisa isha, that if a man wants to marry a woman, yikna aisa tchila bifnei edim, first there has to be a ceremony. And in that ceremony, he is kona her. He takes her as his wife. Right? He presents her with a ring or with something of value, and in exchange for her receiving, for him giving her the something of value, she gives herself over to him. The man takes iskona the woman. Where do we learn how a kinyan kiddushin is made? From how a purchase of a piece of real estate was made. When Avram Avinu bought the field of Machpelah for a burial place, right? No funny jokes, anybody? Right? So we learn from how that transaction was accomplished to how kicha mista Ephron, how a person takes a wife. A transaction that takes place first. But note what we're talking about here. The man is kona the woman. It's not just, okay, now they established that you have to have a photographer, a video, you have to have a whole, wedding ceremony. You don't just get together and get married. They established that the man takes, so to speak, ownership of the woman first, and then they are together. And then the Kuchen Eilu Mitzvah Seh Shel Torahim, and this is a Mitzvah Saseh Dioraisa, and these are what are called Kiddushin or Erusin B'chol Mokheim. When we speak about Jewish marriage, we speak about two stages. One is Erusin, the other one is Nisuin. Erusin, betrothal, is that part with the ring. Right? We do it, in former times they did it two separate times. They did it sometimes a year apart. Right? Betrothal with the ring, that's the Kinyan. Then Nisuin is where they come together and live together as man and wife. The Chuppah, right, which symbolizes the house, etc., but less ceremonial, more actual coming to live together as man and wife. Okay, paragraph 4. Kodem Matan Torah, before the Torah was given, Hayaram Pogesh in Bashuk, Imratza Hu Vehi Naisen, excuse me. Paragraph 3. V'kimet sheniknes ha'isha v'nasis mekudeshes. And when the woman was taken, aval pishol enivol v'nichsel beis bal arei eishes ish. She is now an eishes ish. She is now considered his wife, even though they were never actually together. Pabola chutz me'alchai mises bezdin. V'imrotza legarish, and if he wants to divorce her at this point in time, tzricha get. She would require a get. She would require a document of divorce, written from the husband to the wife, in order to disband and to dissolve the marriage. How did divorce work before Matan Torah? If he left, they would be divorced. If she left, they would be divorced. If he sent her away, they would be divorced. If she left of her own volition, they could also be divorced. The marriage was created by them mutually deciding to come together. The marriage was disbanded by them separating. Now we have a different story, where you have this idea of a kinyan, that the man takes the wife to be his own, and then, in order for the marriage to end, he has to write her a get. We have a problem, a contemporary problem. It seems to be, in a certain sense, a new problem in how it's so used, but we call it the aguna problem. Aguna means the one who is changed. What's that mean? A woman who's stuck. She's stuck with her husband, who she doesn't want to be connected to him anymore, but she doesn't have the power to break the relationship. Why? Because he needs to write the get. She can't write a get. A rabbi can't write a get for her. Right? Her husband owned her, and her husband has to